Blog Talk Radio.
I want to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and again, I'd like to apologize to the people who came to the show on Sunday and heard nothing. We were, in fact, trying to do a simulcast with another program on Revolution Radio. It's called Rob Potter's Show, and I ended up having to close the show here. The latest version of Skype works differently, and I'm not quite able to drag people into my conversation like I used to. So we're going to have to find another way around this issue. Today, we're going to have Dan Willis call in. I think he's on Skype now, and I'll bring him on the show in just a minute. I'm kind of doing a lot of broadcasts today, and for the next 4 or 5 days, I'm off from the day job, so I'm trying to catch up on all this information that's been piling up and compiling and all of these crazy things that are going on in the world today. Edward Albert Meyer is a one-armed farmer from Switzerland. He's had extraterrestrial contact since he was about 5 years old. His first extraterrestrial contacts were telepathic. He would get these telepathic messages from this elderly Pleiaren man named Spot. And one day in 1945, Spot gave Billy the message to go out into the forest there in Bulak and play, which Billy did. At 5 years old, he went out and was in the forest, was looking down in the stream, watching some fish swim around there, when out of the corner of his eye, he saw a silvery pear-shaped craft come down out of the sky and land there in a field, and out stepped this elderly human man with what kind of looked almost like a diver suit on. Spot walked over to Billy, and Billy felt comfortable with him. Billy had seen mental images of him in his mind. He had heard telepathic messages from him. So young Billy followed Spot as he walked back to his ship, and they both entered his ship and started one of many dialogues. Spot was Billy's mentor for the first 11 years of his life. And one interesting thing that Spot told Billy is about his mission here on the earth as kind of a teacher and a prophet. And according to Spot, young Edward Albert Meyer had done this same task in the past on the earth. He had been the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, he had been Emmanuel, and Muhammad, and he had taught an ancient universal teaching that the Meyer material refers to as the teaching of the spirit, which I kind of artificially divide into five categories. There are probably more. Those five categories being the universal consciousness, the human spirit, reincarnation, learning to control our thoughts, and taking responsibility for our action. So Thoth taught Billy for the next 11 years. He told him to stay in the background, to focus on his writings, because the people of the earth, they make for themselves idols. He was told that other people would come forward and start to tell his story. He was told the life of a prophet and a teacher would be difficult, and that he would face certain difficulties in his mission, that people would physically try to kill him, that people close to him would turn against him, like his wife, who called him a hoaxer. Billy had a has had a very, very difficult life, but eventually the information that he talks about will bring the world into a time of peace and prosperity, a time when we're no longer motivated by greed, a time when we understand that we are a part of all things. Thoth told Billy that everything in the universe is one, and it's all bound together. Now, in this episode, we're going to talk about something called JHWH Mata, the Eye of God, or the Ring Nebula, and how that relates to wars in the ancient past, and how that relates to some of the wars that are occurring on the earth. And really, the category of information that I think this falls into is origins of the earth humans. Now, the Meyer material tells us that, well, let me put it this way. One of Billy's later contacts, an extraterrestrial woman named Semyase, said that your forefathers are our forefathers, and that our forefathers came from the constellation of Lyra. Now, Billy's second contact was with a woman named Asket, who is from a parallel universe to ours called the Tao universe. And her people are called the Timmers. 46 trillion years ago, our universe was created in a second parallel sister universe called the Tao universe. The Asket's people are the Timmers. They descended from the Lyrians just as the Plearen did, and they went into this parallel universe. Now, the Lyrians settled in the constellation of Lyra near the Ring Nebula, and nebulas are formed by the ionizing gas of dying stars. And it talks about in Contact 238 about how the Ring Nebula was created by a king of wisdom. Ptah refers to the Ring Nebula, and Ptah is one of Billy's contacts. Ptah uses the word JHWH Mata, and during Billy's trip in the mothership, Billy described this gigantic eye staring at him in space. Now, not a literal eye, but something that looks like an eye, and this is Contact 31, where Ptah says about the Ring Nebula, "It is for us a symbol of evil lust for power and domination, a symbol of hate, destruction, and human madness, that in contrast to other similar and natural formations is the work of man." And later in that, in Contact 238, in line 692, it says, "Not only that an Ishwish, God / King of Wisdom, created the Ring Nebula in his megalomania, which has since been named the Eye of God, but his most distant descendants finally also came to the earth and terrorized this world here," and so on, which at any rate, as a rough measure, happened essentially for the first time only 389,000 years ago, when one disregards those deportations and conquests and other skirmishes that go all the way back to some 20 million years ago. And I want to bring on my guest this afternoon, Dan Willis, who is part of the Disclosure Project. And I've talked with Dan many times before, and I'm so glad he could join us this afternoon. Dan, how are you today?
Mark, good. Glad to be on the show.
It's always a pleasure to chat with you, sir. We're going to be talking about some stuff that's related in some sense to the Disclosure Project, which really I think is the pivotal event that really sparked this whole genre, the whole exopolitical world. And why don't you tell us a little bit about your role in the Disclosure event?
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. Everything is, you can't separate anything. The consciousness aspect, the disclosure aspect, our history, everything is so intertwined. I'm only one of over 500 witnesses. I happen to be one of the witnesses that volunteered to go to Washington to testify. I had a top secret clearance in the military and received a message from a ship that was reporting a USO, I guess you'd call it, unidentified submerged object that was glowing reddish-orange and emerged out of the ocean and flew out of the ocean in front of all the sailors on a USNS ship just off the coast of Alaska. It was going about 7,000 miles per hour, according to the radar operator. The message was sent to Chief of Naval Operations. And again, my testimony was small stuff, compared to the other witnesses that, talked about a base on the other side of the moon that they witnessed, 57 different species, the nuclear nuclear missiles being shut down in rapid succession, NASA airbrushing the UFOs out before they release it to the public, and so on and so forth. But the mainstream media effectively, sanitized that and basically said there was a group that wanted to have a congressional hearing based on that we're not alone and that UFOs are real, but, nothing was mentioned about, that we have the scientists that have the solution to get off of nuclear, oil, coal for about 60 years now. We haven't needed these technologies. They're dangerous and obsolete. But there's interests involved, and we know the CIA controls the mainstream media through the distribution, so... all the things going on in the world, a lot of the media has that element in it where you have what the Tavistock Institute in working in liaison with the CIA, with all the think tanks, and manipulating the information in such a way as to gain a certain perception of the public while they carry on their clandestine operations behind national security. So, anyway, that's... and once in a while I do a show with you. That's about what I do, just to try to... I see all the channels for change have been essentially compromised in this world. You can go to Washington, you can go on Capitol Hill, you can send faxes in, you can pick it in front of White House until you're blue in the face, but all the senators and congresspeople have been indoctrinated how to respond to this, and all of them are basically out of the loop. And Truman set up the CIA with no congressional oversight, so you have no accountability there. So it's a hard thing to contemplate how to transform this world of all these situations other than... looking at consciousness, and looking at each one of us has an ability that apparently they are very concerned of that we don't become aware of. They took, back in 1957, they took out all the aspects of consciousness out of all the universities that have to do with consciousness in relationship to psychology and sociology. And I think there lies a key in the transforming of the world.
You know, it's interesting what you say about consciousness and that being the key to changing the world. Two of Billy's latest books, one I've read once, it's called The Psyche, and it goes into great depth and talks about the human spirit. It talks about the human mind. And one interesting thing that it says that we have a material consciousness called the psyche. And there's this psyche controls the material-based thoughts and feelings, but it also says that we have what's called a spirit body, and in that spirit body is something called the Gemut, and that the Gemut controls our thoughts and feelings associated with our human spirit. So we have this counterpart. We have the material and the immaterial man, the spiritual side. And I think one of the things that the powers that be don't want us to do is to get in touch with our spiritual side. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah, they went out of the way. Back in 57 and in 1946 when they rewrote all the Rockefeller Foundation rewrote the history books on what happened in World War II. You know, we won over Germany, but not over the Nazis. The Nazis effectively infiltrated into the CIA and NASA, and they purposely omitted all the references to the occult that the Nazis, occult meaning hidden. Himmler was extremely fascinated. In fact, he was very interested in the implications of karma, him of all people.
Really?
To understand, he was very interested in karma, you know, because he used to go up there in that, what was it, Wellsburg Castle, where they had the elite SS that had special paranormal abilities, and they'd gather together in a circle. And they do like group visualization, group mind type of things in order to, you know, promote their agenda.
See, the thing that I think is, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt you. What is important about that? You know, the problem that people have is they see what you're saying, and oh, the Nazis did this. Well, the Nazis did it, therefore it must be evil. It must be bad. We should avoid this. But I don't think that's the case. I think the Nazis did do evil and bad things, but what they were dealing with is the power of consciousness and the way to harness that, and that's not evil. At least I don't think so. What do you think?
Oh, I think it was brilliant. Yeah, I think when you what was so impressive about, you know, the benevolent, positive aspects of the Nazis was that they looked out of the box. They searched, you know, in through India, ancient Tibet. They searched the world for ancient knowledge because they believed they were the master race from Atlantis, and that they wanted to. That's why they took like 140,000 volumes through these theosophical libraries. They raided all these libraries, and you know, there's indications they also, you know, took King Solomon's treasure, you know, before Operation Eagle Flight back in 1944, which had these ancient scrolls and tablets that had the knowledge that the Knights of Templar were guarding all these years. And so they took all that, it's believed, you know, according to Wendell Stevens, who was, you know, on the Myers case you were talking about earlier. He said that they took all the disc factories and things they had in Germany and put them down into the Antarctic base, in which 250,000 Germans are unaccounted for, and 100 U-boats and the top scientists were not all included on Project Paperclip. So the Nazis. The Nazis had a good fallback plan that that effectively worked because they had all their contacts and things in the United States. The Nazis were essentially an instrument, you could say, for the cabal, or a fraction of it. And like they said, the CIA had basically two CIAs. One was, you know, hunting down Nazis, and the other one was recruiting them. So the elements that are within the intelligence community, apparently have a lot of deep connections with them, and the whole aspect of consciousness, I think, when you dig into metaphysical studies, and you know, I've done a lot. I worked with Dr. Marcel Vogel, and he set up a laboratory, Psychic Research Incorporated, where we set up a full-on electron microscope, spectrophotometers, full-on scientific, and he was a top scientist at IBM, invented the phosphors for color television, magnetic coatings on hard drives, and had over 140-some patents. He was a genius. He was an incredible mind. He got into this because of a creativity course he had to give to IBM, and was looking at Clive Baxter's work on plant communication. And he read it, and he crumpled it up and threw it in the trash, and he thought it was pure nonsense. And then he decided, oh, this would be a good thing for creativity, you know, for the engineers. And so he set up a script chart recorder, hooked up the split-leaf philodendron, and the moment he thought that he was going to burn or hurt the plant, the chart squiggled. And he said that squiggle, you know, that as soon as a thought formed in his mind, changed his entire life. And so from there, he went into trying to understand water and the quartz crystals and the interface between the geometries of these things we have in the material world and consciousness, because he could measure thought. He could measure the effects of that. And, you know, he also analyzed the samples, and I was there, and I actually handled them from Billy Meyer, that he determined there was a cold fusion process that could not be done here on Earth. And the analysis of those extraterrestrial materials.
You know, Dan, we got so much to talk about. It's crazy. What just came to my mind while you were talking there is, in the Disclosure Project, you guys are talking about UFOs, you know, and things like that. Now, Clifford Stone talked about different species of extraterrestrials. But now, when you go, like, for example, in the Meyer material, you're talking about Marcel Vogel there, and you talked about plant communication. And now we jump off the diving board into the very deep rabbit hole here of information. And we have to kind of pick one of these fascinating topics to talk about. What I think I'm going to start with is human origins. And the Meyer material, boy, human origins is a big subject, especially humanity of the Earth. I'm going to start with the constellation of Lyra, because the Meyer material tells us that one of the things Semyonze told Billy, she said that your forefathers are our forefathers, and our forefathers come from the constellation of Lyra. And the Lyrians were called Titans. They were 20 to 30 feet tall. They had all these incredible consciousness abilities, telekinesis, levitation, telepathy, looking into the past and the future. And it just so turns out that within the last few years, that our science here on the Earth is finding life-bearing planets in the constellation of Lyra. And I have a clip here that I'm going to play, and maybe we can talk about this clip. It talks about some of these new worlds that they're finding. They have been seen by the Kepler mission, which is one of these telescopes. Kepler 62 in the Lyrian system is smaller and cooler than our sun, and there's two candidate worlds there for life. They're water worlds. They have global oceans. Kepler-62e might be tropical and a little bigger than Earth. And there's another planet in that Kepler-62 system that is cooler than Earth. So let me play this clip, and then I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, because this is science starting to confirm some of the things that we've talked about.
Earth is the lone oceanic planet in the family of the Sun. Now, imagine a planetary system with two of them. Astronomers may have found just such a system. And the two water worlds orbiting there are among the closest analogs of Earth yet found. The star, Kepler-62, about 1,200 light-years away in the constellation Lyra, is like our Sun, but smaller and cooler. So the habitable orbits, where water can be liquid, are closer in. Each of the two candidate water worlds could be entirely covered by a global ocean, according to astronomers' computer models. Orbiting once every 122 Earth days, Kepler-62e could be tropical, humid and hot, with a very cloudy atmosphere. It's perhaps 60% bigger than Earth. Further out, in a 267-day orbit, Kepler-62f is about 40% larger than Earth. And it's almost surely cooler. In fact, it could be an ice ball from pole to pole, unless it has a lot of carbon dioxide in its atmosphere. These two share their star with three less hospitable planets, orbiting too close in, and so too hot for liquid water. With no land masses and no chance for fire, it's hard for us to visualize how any intelligent inhabitants could build a technological society on a totally oceanic world.
NASA's Kepler mission has discovered three super Earth-sized planets orbiting in the habitable zone of their stars. The habitable zone is the distance from a star where the surface temperature of an orbiting planet could be suitable for liquid water. Each of the three new planets is less than twice the size of Earth. About 360 light-years from Earth, two of the newly discovered planets are in a five-planet system called Kepler-62. The host star is smaller and cooler than our Sun and has three planets that orbit very close, making them hot, inhospitable worlds. Farther away are two planets in the habitable zone. Orbiting on the inner edge of the habitable zone is Kepler-62e. It is about 60% larger than the size of Earth and orbits every 122 days. The smallest of the habitable zone planets is called Kepler-62f. It is 40% larger in size than Earth and is likely a rocky world. Kepler-62f orbits every 267 days. These two planets are the smallest yet discovered in the habitable zone of another star. Much farther away, about 2,700 light-years from Earth, is a two-planet system around a star called Kepler-69. The star is the same type and very similar to our own Sun, although it is slightly smaller and cooler. The inner planet, Kepler-69b, is 2.2 times the size of Earth and orbits every 13 days. It is much hotter and closer to its star than the planet Mercury is to the Sun. The outer planet, Kepler-69c, is about 70% larger than Earth and orbits every 242 days. It is the smallest planet found in the habitable zone of a Sun-like star.
Isn't that crazy, Dan? What do you think of that?
Well, I think the people in the secret space program may have already checked this stuff out, but no doubt. It's kind of interesting that Kip Thorne, an astrophysicist, said that there's these wormholes right above Earth that allows for the travel without having to go through the normal distance that a light beam would travel, where you could warp the matrix that we're in and appear someplace else, many light years away. It's kind of interesting that my military thing was right off the coast of Alaska, which is Alaska's one wormhole, and the other one's down near Antarctica, kind of in the Falkland Island area, just off of Antarctica. And you know, that would be, you know, it's crazy. You know, you have this, as you know, Richard Dolan says, this breakaway civilization with a secret space program going on, and they're keeping the rest of humanity, you know, driving vehicles needing gasoline and, you know, dangerous, you know, the radiation that's going into the oceans and, you know, from these plants that are so dangerous, and there's so many hundreds of them, and that's kind of why I keep doing these shows, because, you know, because we have the scientists that they refuse to let that the CIA hire executives in the CBS. They omitted that, you know. So, you know, it seems like the alternative media is like the only way that this message can get out, that you know, the human race has been essentially retarded, in, you know, not only spiritually but technologically. I mean, we should be, you know, seriously, we should be, every house should have its own power element. We don't even need roads. We don't need wires across the sky. Everybody should have plenty of fresh organic food that's not genetically modified. There should be plenty for everybody. All the resources, that vast resources, we go for these wars and you know, just all the, you know, all the abuse that happens with the financial structure. You know, we could be living in a paradise here, in a world that everybody has anti-gravity vehicles, and that's working. Most importantly, it's working in harmony with the living being that we're on. You know, the ancient civilizations, they understood the interface of the matrix and the geometrical aspects, you know, with the pyramids and everything. That's what led me into this, because I felt deeply there's a connection. I have a science background, and I felt there was a deep connection with consciousness and geometry. And, I forgot to mention, with the plant communication, you know, Marcel went all the way to Prague, Czechoslovakia, and set up with his colleague in the lab in IBM, and was able to show that his thought that the inverse square law did not apply. That was instantaneous, and that we worked with this incredible camera that took thousands of pictures, was patented by the European Patent Office, that we imported from England back in the 50s, that shows without a doubt that the reality that we are in is a holographic matrix that goes backwards and forwards in the time. And this is called the Delaware camera, and it had a time spiral. Not only could you tune into somebody like Delaware was able to tune into a woman who was pregnant and look at the fetus, and was able to move a time spiral that went forwards and backwards in the time and progress it forward in time, showing that, you know, there's a matrix, you know, that has an element of the past and future. And it's all interconnected. And if you understand the holograms, you know that each one of us is like a fractal of this larger consciousness, you could say. And every aspect of a hologram, if you affect it, it affects all the aspects of the hologram. So this lends to the theory of the 100th monkey, the collective consciousness, that each one of us does have an effect.
You know, part of the problem and the challenge in this genre in the alternative community is there's so much information here, and I think part of what we have to do is break it down step by step and repeat it, because what we're really doing and what we've done in the last 35, 40 minutes here is giving people kind of a fire hose of information. It's really interesting listening to you, because the Meyer material says the same thing, that time is like a spiral.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Well, it's interesting, you know. You know, people can look at the research work I did with Marcel Vogel by going to marcelvogel.org, and down on the page you can see an actual photograph done by the camera and photos inside the camera, which is an interesting device. You know, I've done a lot of work with radionic-type devices, psychotronic devices, whatever you want to call them. Basically, it's an interface between it's like a tuning focus for the mind, because we have the ultimate instrument within us, and these things outside of us, so supposedly, are like a augmentation to what we have, the equipment that we have within us.
Well,
and so
can I ask you a quick
spiral
question?
Has seven turns. Yes.
So does the past still exist today?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting? So somehow we travel this spiral back, and what you're telling me, I think, is that Marcel Vogel, with this camera, was able to somehow travel through this spiral to see the past, which still exists.
Well, you know, we were able to have some success. We were trying to bring it up to current technology in 1984, I think I was working with him on that. When Delaware had it back in the 1950s, at the Delaware Laboratories in England, he was able to take thousands of photos. And one of the photos that he did was actually going back in time to his wedding day.
Really?
And he was actually able to go back, and it was, you know, not the clearest, you know, high-resolution images you have, but, you know, you could see him and his wife and on a hill where they got married, and, you know, because everything, you know, psychics have the ability, you know, to tune into, they call it the Akashic. You know, there's so many different semantics, but, you know, you study all the different sciences. You know, you can go into the Rosicrucian studies, you can go into, you know, mystic Christianity, you go into the Palladians, you go into, and at certain points, you have certain information that is consistent, you know, that I call them like indicators, you know, that, you know, because not everything is a pure channel of information. There's always distortions, there's always humans, and humans filter through their own perception things, but there's a lot of, and that's why, you know, since each of us are creative beings, you could say, each of us, you know, can, you know, just basically, you know, pull things out of our butt and say anything, you know, about anything. But when you have, that's what attracted me to working with Dr. Marcel Vogel, because he was a full-on scientist, and he got into the nitty-gritty of actually measuring what was going on, is able to prove and substantiate it with measurements. So when you have things, you know, like you talk about, you know, the collapsing wave theory, you know, with the double split experiment where the observer changes the reality just by observing it, each of us has an effect on reality as we perceiving it. So there is certain things that are fundamentally true, you could say, no matter what your belief system is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are certain things that, you know, people have different belief systems, and so long as they work or align with universal truths, you know, they will work. That's why it's so important that everybody, you know, understand spirituality, understand consciousness, do the research and see what lines up, because as you dig into it, you start to see that you can see it in nature. Nature is probably the biggest teacher of how the cosmic laws are working, you know, because you see everything in nature is based on golden mean ratio. And what is the golden mean ratio? It's the only ratio that can go into infinity. Therefore, the nature of the matrix that we are in goes into infinity in both the macro and micro aspect, you know, from galaxies to molecules. And consciousness appears to follow a similar trend in that we may be part of a larger, for lack of a term, God consciousness, that we are each like a fractal of that. And each have within us, you know, like the Sufis say, you know, think of thy puny form when the entire universe is enfolded within you. We have, each of us has the same potential to tap into the larger. And it seems that love has a lot to do with it from what I've seen.
Dan, it's really bizarre listening to you because you're blowing my mind. I haven't like told you yet because it just you're echoing all of these different things that I say in my show when I talk about the Meyer material. I have another caller. It's Solaris Blue Raven. I want to welcome Solaris to the show. Solaris, how are you this afternoon?
Oh, I'm pretty good, Mark. Hi, and hi, Dan.
Now, did you interview Dan yet, Solaris?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's been on Raven Star's Witching Hour.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought so.
Yeah. He's going to be on Hyperspace.
I love doing a show with Solaris. Hi, Solaris.
Oh, I love having you on. We have a similar thread of consciousness. I think we're very familiar on the higher level of spirituality.
Well,
you guys speak my language.
Yeah. Dan, let me tell you something here. And this is something that Semyase told Billy that I quoted on Solaris's show as well. She said that your ancient terrestrial philosopher said that the entire universe is found within the human and that the human is the microcosm within the macrocosm. And what I think she meant by that is that the cells in our body, for example, we have electrons that rotate around the nucleus. You look to the galaxy, you'll see planets rotating around stars. We have this branching structure in our circulatory system. We see a branching structure on the trees. We see the rotating spiral in the shell, the rotating spiral arms of the galaxy. So it's just so strange to hear you talk. It's the same kind of information. And, you know, I just played that clip about how astronomers in the Kepler, on the Kepler mission, are now getting objective proof of water worlds existing in other star systems. But we don't hear about that on the news, do we? And we don't even hear that talked about much in the UFO community. And what's the deal there, Dan? What do you think?
Media control, my favorite subject. well, you know, they want to keep us stupid. You know, they essentially, you know, I mean, all the truth is out there and hidden in plain sight. Everybody can find research for themselves. But, you know, hey, if you just got a job, you're going 9 to 5, and you come home, watch the evening news, you're wiped out, go to bed, get up the next day, go to work, trying to make the bills and everything like that. You know, there's not time for that, you know, in order to really research and see, well, is this really true, you know, like, Amber Lyons was saying, I couldn't believe the lies they were putting, CNN was making me put into my reporting, you know, then they fired her. We have this whole perception, we've been, I like how Solaris said, a world trapped in a lie. It was so appropriate because our education system, what they rewrote in the history books, what they redid in our science, what they do with archaeology, what they do on the evening news, all of this has been orchestrated with the guys with the big bucks, you know, that have kind of a little agenda going on. And it seems like the Nazis worked out just fine for infiltrating into our system, you know, thanks to Alan Dulles back, you know, in the mid-40s. And, you know, they've, you know, squashed presidents that tried to expose them, like JFK. And Eisenhower tried to warn us, you know, about the unwarranted influences after he did that new executive order creating a new MJ-12 group that was headed by Alan Dulles. You know, so we have a situation perpetuating today only on steroids. And so, I mean, they've got it down to such a, they understand human psychology so well. And you can imagine with the NSA, you know, with Snowden saying they're using that technology against us in our name, and William Biney, who recently said that they're, you know, he was like 30 years a top codebreaker in the NSA, he quit, disgusted after 9/11 with the Bush administration policies, that their main objective is population control of the NSA. They're not, you know, doing anything with terrorists and stuff like that. At least that's not the main objective. You know, so if you've got quantum computing capabilities, which they do, with storage for 100 years of every communication on this planet, you know, they could put out their psyops propaganda, you know, over all the networks which they control, and they could actually, by monitoring the conversations with artificial intelligence, actually see what we're buying, if we're getting along with it, or we're starting to catch on. They can see what kind of numbers, they can identify who are the blue pill takers and who are the red pill takers, you know. Media control is the thing that stopped disclosure on May 9th, 2001. Mm-hmm. And I have two little audio clips. If we have time, I can play to illustrate that.
Let's go. I want to go to those clips, but I want to throw something out at both of you. One of the things I think is happening in the UFO community is we may have CIA agents actually infiltrating the UFO community. And when I hear people talking about evil aliens, it's kind of a red flag for me. I just want to throw that out at either of you. If you want to comment on that, please do. If you don't, I understand.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that one, Mark. I believe that's a red flag for sure. And I also agree with everything that Dan was just saying as well. But, yeah, it sounds to me more like the bad guy is projected onto an extraterrestrial, when, in fact, it's actually covert black budget programs that are deploying the psychotronic hardware to create these my labs and screw with people's brainwave patterns and everything else that creates the illusion of experiencing an extraterrestrial, when, in fact, it's a mind trip. It's a mind hack. So, yeah, I know the dark side of the technology. I mean, I was interfaced with it, you know, back in 2004. So I'm well aware of what they do. They can't hide it from me, and I do believe there are infiltrators.
And that's why I think your show is so important, Solaris, because you're one of the few radio show people that focuses on, I think, on the consciousness, the higher consciousness side. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone else wants to talk about the reptilians and the evil aliens and all that, you know.
Right. Well, likewise, you do the same, Mark.
Yeah, they can't go in the fair. You know, before I understood that William Casey, you know, the CIA director for Reagan, this briefing that he had that revealed that every single extraterrestrial UFO-related movie script in Hollywood since 1951, the day the Earth stood still, has been every single one till today has been influenced by the CIA for the script. And before I understood that, I actually made a web page that started in 1951, because I started to see this incredible pattern of why are there so many movies of extraterrestrials coming to Earth wanting to kill all of us and take over the planet, one after another after another. It's like, what's going on here? Then I start to realize that, wow, maybe Wernher von Braun was right, because he was right about the Soviets being a lie, because Dulles and the Nazi general, Reinhard Gehlen, was lying to them about the Soviet estimates, which they put $8 trillion into a lie. And then right after 2001, in May, after we did the disclosure conference, there was the terrorist event, which he said they would do in order, a false flag event, in order to perpetuate their agenda. And then they said, you know, there'd be asteroids, and then the last one, on his deathbed testimony, said would be the extraterrestrial threat. And we know that, you know, back in the late 40s, early 50s, and we even have witnesses that went there that that testified that they had these alien reproduction vehicles back in the 50s. So, yeah, they could pull that off if they want to in the future. But, you know, a lot of these abduction things, going all the way back to, you know, Betty and Barney Hill, you know, where they saw under hypnosis an evil-eyed Nazi, you know, along with the Zeta reptilians. You know, a lot of the MILAB stuff has been joint paramilitary with extraterrestrials, even the programmed life forms, from what I understand, that anybody would see these things and they say, oh my God, these are from outer space, you know, so, but they're made under, you know, underground facilities. So, yeah, there is this agenda to put into the subconscious minds of millions of people. When they think about extraterrestrials, they think, oh my God, it's War of the Worlds, or, you know, they see a crop circle, like the ridiculous movie with Mel Gibson, Signs, where, you know, farmers think you have a shotgun, you know. And you've got a definite religious connotation, and you see the alien, he looks like this demonic creature, you know,
right.
And they're all afraid with their little tinfoil hats all hovering together, you know. And you know, you look at the crop circles, and they're beautiful. They're beautiful
right.
geometries that I'm sure there is a communication to our subconscious minds when we look at these things, or to the Earth, or something beyond what people are understanding what these crop circles are doing. Because it definitely has to do with geometry and consciousness, because in the research work we did at the lab, you know, you find that quartz crystals, which have been used in cultures, you know, all throughout time and totally diverse in similar ways, you find that the angle of the quartz as it terminates is approximately the 52-degree angle, the exact same angle of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And you look at the mathematics of that, and you take one side of that, and you do the half the side to the apex, and what do you get? You get the golden mean ratio. There again, you have the harmonics of infinity, which is what is why they choose those particular mathematics. And if you look at the inner lattice angles of water, which also, by the way, is hexagonal, just like water. Water and quartz both have this tetrahedral hexagonal geometries, which relate to the flower of life and all these different elements of hexagonal matrix. You have these geometries that go into infinity, and is like the basic fundamentals that you see all over the planetary system, as Richard Hoagland points out at the 19.47 or 19.5 degrees on the planet, the dual tetrahedral structure. And then the Russians discovered the pentadodecahedron grid all over the planet, of which, you know, the major were, you know, in the Devil Sea, Bermuda Triangle, and the Great Pyramid and Stonehenge. You have these energy lines in planetary bodies and in the sun. And so you have this geometrical structure throughout the universe and in our bodies as well.
Guys, what I think I'll do is we'll take about 1 minute break. I'll put both of you on mute just for a minute, play some gentle, relaxing music, and then I want to pick back up in this conversation, particularly when we were talking about the movie Signs, because there's something else I want to talk about there that I always thought was really interesting. So we'll be right back, folks. Just a little relaxing music, and we'll be right back on track. everyone. I want to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We have Dan Willis and Solaris Blue Raven on the line. We're talking about right now, I think, the movie Signs. And Dan brought up some really interesting comments on how we're being manipulated by Hollywood into hating the evil alien. And Solaris, I wanted to ask you, you know what's so absurd about that show, Signs? Remember when they were fighting against the evil alien with the baseball bat? Do you remember that part? Did you see that movie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that crazy? You know, here,
wild.
You got this E.T. who has this super technology, can travel across the galaxy, but you can take him out with a baseball bat.
Exactly. Well, if you remember, go ahead. Okay. Did you have something to add there, Dan?
I was just going to try it in and say, you know, this is definitely a religious psyops going on with that one.
Yes. Yeah, religion.
Yeah.
They're trying to use that control structure again. What do you think,
Sarah? Fear. It's fear, Mark. It's total fear. It's just like, you know, with the craft. I mean, mysticism is a perfect example, or even witchcraft, the Wicca. I mean, when you look at the majority of people who are into the craft, they're not evil, satanic worshippers. But yet at the same time, there's so much propaganda against people who are into that or mystery school teachings that there's this big paranoia and fear. This fear is the mind killer, as they say in Dune, and I'm telling you, it's total control over the mass collective.
Now, you say fear is the mind killer. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Well, it's Frank Herbert's Dune. It's taken from Frank Herbert's book, The Dune, the miniseries, also, which was on television. But, yeah, if you're familiar with Frank Herbert's Dune, I'm sure maybe you are, Dan. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, literally, but that was one of the sayings of when he was confronting a lot of these challenges, you know, he would say, fear is the mind killer. You know, I will let the fear pass through me. So it's that same concept, and it's really about changing your thought patterns to resonate with the higher frequency so that you're able to define what fear is. And fear is just a program. It's a program that's been inducting people for a long time through all these rules and regulations, and they really have people now. I mean, to me, they feel like they've really corralled the mass collective to some degree with propaganda about extraterrestrials, potential wars, you know, you name it.
Whenever I hear someone talking about fallen angels and demons and evil extraterrestrials, I find it really difficult to even have an intelligent conversation, because if you break down what these words actually mean, for example, the word angel, all that means is messenger.
Mm-hmm.
But our religions have added all of these bizarre connotations to that. If you use the word fallen angel, well, if I'm, for example, a messenger, and all of us on this show are, if I fall down, am I a fallen angel? Well, they say, no, these fallen angels have fallen from heaven. Well, then I say, well, where is heaven? And they say, oh, well, we don't know exactly where heaven is, but, you know, it's some place up there where God is or whatever. So I think part of this psyop is keeping us in this ambiguity where we can't ever.
Oh, absolutely.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah. Oh, I would just say absolutely. I agree with you. It's the indoctrination. I remember a long time ago, I was sitting outside a restaurant and I was drawing up some things I was teaching a class at the University of Humanistic Studies in San Diego on sacred geometry. And I had, you know, I had pentagrams and hexagons, and I had all kinds of stuff I was preparing. And this woman walks up to my table and says, "Oh, don't you know that's Satan's work? That's, you know," and I said, "Well, then I guess Satan is doing nature then, you know,
yes.
Because this is all through nature."
Right, they're all programmed.
Anyway, I just wanted to put that in there.
That's a good point you made there, Dan. And, you know, heaven and hell, it's a state of consciousness is what it is. So if people are falling, then that would be, in my interpolation, you're dealing with an energetic universe. It's an electric universe. It's a frequency-based universe. So whatever they want to call heaven is just a state of consciousness. As you know, bliss is a state of consciousness. So hell is the same thing. It's a state of consciousness where you're not connected to source. But really, truly, I mean, religions have corrupted so much data, it's not even funny. And when I look back at even the interpolation they do of Yahweh, Yahweh's are celestial teachers. I don't know where they got off saying this is this vicious God. That's not what the Yahweh is, according to celestial databases. It's a celestial teacher. So that should show you how off they are with their interpolation of the data. That's scary.
Oh,
I
tell you.
Let me tell you.
They are.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they're so effective. Because, you know, you look at the Bible, there's a lot of good juice in the Bible, a lot of truths, you know ye are gods, you know, better things you do, kingdom of heaven is within, you know, all this stuff, but they take it, you know, and there's good stuff in the Quran and Buddha and all these different things, but they take it and humans manipulate them for their own agenda, and then they get these people who say, oh, this is the word of God, you know, and you know, you got to be careful, you know, with that one. You know, it's like
totally.
it effectively stifles. It's like in computer programming, which you can relate to, Mark. It's like a closed loop program. You say, well, everything within your structure, but as soon as you go outside your structure, oh, that's Satan. Yep, you got to go back in again. You know, it's a closed loop, and so they. You know, I have family that's the evangelical, you know, Christians that they think, you know, I'm, you know, dealing on the edge of the devil or something, you know. But, you know, they refuse. I sent them my article, you know, on the webmatrix.net about media control and extraterrestrial history and everything like that, but they refuse to look at it, you know, because they don't want anything to upset their structure because religion is such a perfect closed loop that doesn't allow any other tolerance or any other open-mindedness to explore any other kind of possibility, and that keeps people trapped on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Mind control, total mind control. You know, basically they're brainwashing their followers to believe a certain thing, and if they go outside the box, they threaten them with fear and intimidation tactics, you know, based on, oh, you're going to go to hell, or you're going to have to deal with this. I mean, they're really just playing middleman. It's such an illusion. You think in the year of 2014 and the illusion of time that we would have bypassed all this nonsense. But still, you know, we've got the majority on this planet being programmed. And look at the output now, you guys, as people who are savvy with computers, input-output. So look and see what's happening. Look at the regurgitation of debris that's happening due to people's false programming.
I got to play this clip. I played it earlier, I think at 9 a.m. when I did the first show this morning. It's Kenneth Copeland. Are you guys familiar with Kenneth Copeland?
Oh, God. You turned me on to that crazy video before.
I have to play this, man. It's okay. Humorous. You got to hear this.
It is funny. Man.
Okay, it's kind of long. I don't know if I'll play it all, but it's so good. Here you go.
Every year, televangelists attract more than believers. They draw hundreds of millions of dollars from all around the world. All of it is tax-exempt, but should it be? Senator Charles Grassley is investigating six top TV preachers. And tonight, our chief investigative correspondent, Armin Katayan, has a hard look at one of them, Kenneth Copeland, the so-called godfather of prosperity gospel.
To live in the Garden of Eden, hallelujah!
In one TV sermon after another,
somebody shout amen!
Kenneth Copeland and wife Gloria implore viewers to sow the seeds of their faith by following God's word and donating dollars, promising a hundredfold return in happiness and wealth.
It's a bottom-line business.
This former ministry employee who feared being identified answered hundreds of prayer requests a day, most sent in with donations, before quitting, feeling betrayed by Copeland's gospel of prosperity.
I receive it!
He is the recipient of the prosperity message.
So when he's preaching health and wealth,
he's filling that bottom line on his business.
That's why Senate investigators are digging into whether ministry resources are being diverted into an array of for-profit companies tied to the Copelands. Cattle, horses, aviation, real estate development, and gas and oil wells, to name but a few. Michael Hoover, who worked for the Kenneth Copeland Ministries for 5 years, quit in 2005 over disagreements with the church. He is one of three former employees who told CBS News they witnessed other employees doing work on behalf of for-profit businesses tied to the Copeland family.
I believe that they were using a lot of the ministry's assets for personal businesses.
The nonprofit activity and the for-profit activity are so intertwined that you can't separate them.
A two-month CBS News investigation, including interviews with nearly a dozen former Copeland employees, raises serious questions about the Copelands' religious empire. Beginning with this lavish lakefront home, all 18,000 square feet of it, and a fleet of private planes, all paid for by the ministry.
The Lord spoke to me and said, you believe for a citation 10 right now.
Copeland got what he wanted. That's the $20 million jet right there parked at the ministry-owned airport, one of four planes owned by the church.
It will never, ever be used for anything other than what is becoming to you, Lord Jesus.
But that's not what happened. CBS News has learned he used this ministry jet and another to fly to and from Colorado three times in 2007, the site of frequent Copeland family vacations. The ministry claims that in rare instances that jets or employees are used for personal business, the church is reimbursed.
You are not created for poverty.
Churches are not required to file tax forms or make their finances public. The ministry, which says it does everything by the book, has refused to answer key questions about its finances raised by Senate investigators.
We answered them. We gave them a several-page lesson on no.
Kenneth Copeland refused repeated interview requests by CBS News. When we went to ministry headquarters near Fort Worth, Texas, we were turned away.
There's no way I can see him right now. Are you sure?
If Senator Charles Grassley doesn't get the answers he wants, he may well resort to some words of his own in the form of a Senate subpoena. Armin Katayan, CBS News, Newark, Texas.
I love that section where he shouts. What does he say? He said, somebody shout amen, you know. And the Lord spoke to him. The Lord spoke to him to buy that $20 million Lear jet. Do you guys buy
like a front of Keith?
I swear there must be some vortex in Texas, you know, that just sucks all this stuff in, you know. It's kind of funny. This guy has to mask his voice like, you know, remember like the disclosure thing they did in the 80s where the guy is talking about the Zeta Reptilians and the eating strawberry ice cream and stuff like that, you know. And the guy's voice, you know, one pity is not going to Jesus, you know, and you know, it's almost as though they're like possessed, you know.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, you know, psychotronic programming, it comes in all forms and designs, and if people are hearing the voice of God like they hear communication, well, it may not be God. Like I said, it could be just some little operator in a control room somewhere.
Well, next time you're online, do a Google for Kenneth Copeland. I want you to see the guy's eyes.
Oh, I did. He looks like Iron Tail from that animation, Easter. Remember that? Here comes Peter Cottontail. When we grew up, we had that little cartoon. You probably remember it. Maybe you do. I don't know. But anyway, Dan, it has a little Iron Tail character, and he looks just like it in animation.
With those crazy eyes, man. This guy has these.
Yeah,
it's worse. Remember Chucky? Little crazy Chucky?
Oh, right.
The scary doll. He's worse than that.
Let's put it this way. If that's their heaven, I'll pass. Thank you. No thanks. I'll move on to my sector.
So Dan, you know, maybe we should start up a ministry. Me and you, we could be televangelists, and then we can have an 18,000-foot square home and a Learjet and, you know, the whole nine yards. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's an interesting psychology of the people. You know, they go there, and they're, like, in tears listening to this guy. It's like they're going there, you know, because – They want to believe. You know, I sat down for like 3 hours with my nephew's wife, who heavy indoctrination she's been through, and we went through the whole thing, you know, for 3 hours digging into. But Constantine went in and took out 25 books of the Bible, and then the church had them edit another 25, and you have this and you have that, and then I finally got it down, and then she just said, well, it just gives me something to believe in, you know. And I guess there's those people who just want to believe and not take their God-given right of logic and discernment and explore all avenues of thought. There's a certain kind of psychology that just wants to lock on to a religion and just guide me. Just tell me what I should know, you know. And there's a lot of those people out there. And, you know, and the government has actually infiltrated into the clergy in, you know, saying that, you know, Romans 13, you know, give Caesar whatever he wants, you know, and, you know, this old Bible stuff, they figured out how to cherry pick certain things that work with their agenda, you know. And anyway, religions, I mean, how many wars have there been in religions? I believe in two things, the golden rule and love. And it seems like I don't see that happening with religion a lot.
Evidently, they're making pretty good money, though.
Yeah, it's a corporation. That's why. It's not a religion. It's a religion masked, and then, of course, the corporation is what's driving it. But, yeah, you know, people don't know how to empower themselves anymore, Mark. That's what it boils down to. And part of embracing your celestial heritage is embracing that power and that, you know, that multidimensional mastery, which, of course, it's taught in the mystery schools. But these guys, you know, they want to delegate power, and they want the people to delegate their power to a middleman, which would be the church or a corporation. Now government makes decisions on behalf of the people. The people don't have a voice anymore. They don't choose to. You know, they're just living in little boxes, and they poke their heads out once in a while and look up at the sky and see chemtrails and then poke their heads back in and watch television. So.
You know, and the danger here is our lack of consciousness advancement, our lack of understanding of nature, our willingness to be put in these mindsets that these real primitive religions have. I think it's leading into this state that's causing conflict. I want to play just a few sounds from the Ukraine war. And this is real warfare, guys. The Ukrainians are a modern society with advanced weapons, just like the Russians. And I think they're both great people. And I hate to see for them to destroy each other, and I hate even worse for us to get involved in this. Just listen to some of this warfare. Anyway, that's the real thing. These guys aren't playing, and this could be coming to our neighborhood soon.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure we stop this. What do you guys think of all those sounds? It's incredible.
I think it's coming to our neighborhood, like you just said. I think we are in for a big surprise in the next few years if things don't clear out.
I do too. Dan, what do you think?
Oh, you look at the militarization of our police. You know, there's all the news coming about in Sacramento. They were like up in arms because they got these, you know, ambush-resistant, you know, full-on military assault vehicles. That, you know, and the police. I can understand the citizens, you know, complaining about it. But at the same time, the police argument is that, well, you know, look at the criminals that are coming in. Look at the weaponry that they have. They can't outclass us. So, you know, you have this justification of escalation and more justification. You'll probably see this more and more in the news as different events are created that lend to an engineering of consent of greater controls, greater martial law, greater police state, you know, it's moving in that direction. But, you know, so long as people don't understand that there is a deception going on, that things are not, they appear to be a certain way, but there's hidden hands behind the scenes that are orchestrating things to be in a certain way. You know, and, you know, when Kennedy got shot and LBJ escalated the war, I got shipped off to Vietnam in combat action, and I feel for all the guys in, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, going through post-traumatic stress. I mean, it's like living hell, and you see on television all the imagery of these poor people, you know, and being mass executed, you know, like Nazi style, you know, into graves that don't accept their religion and things. You know, it's so much of that's going on in the world, and you have to wonder, as far as the consciousness element, the people who are watching this on television, they're seeing all this horrific, and they've been busted, you know, several times of showing that they manipulate scenes on the news and to depict it in a certain way, to give it a certain flavor, so that the viewer would see it in a particular way. And if all these millions of viewers are watching this on the evening news, are we in our own conscious recognition seeing this and seeing the fear and seeing the things going on? Actually, the question is, are we contributing to the collective manifestation of more of this?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Well, the thing we don't want to do is bring that kind of war over here to the U.S. And one of the things I want to do here is raise awareness. I want you to listen to these Ukrainian MiGs flying overhead. This is the kind of power that's released with modern warfare today.
Давай, спускайся, красавчик.
Вот это сейчас будет прикол!
What do you guys think of that, man? I just don't want that to come over here.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dan. I mean, honestly, I think it's inevitable. I think we're on such a dark spiral right now. We're riding such an atrocious wave that I don't think we can get out of this. I really don't. I don't see it as clearing out. So that's my own take and impression. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people are looking at the United States, who are Americans right now, and thinking that that maybe it's not the best place to be living, that maybe we should move out of the U.S. and get the hell out of here. So, and I hate to do that.
I think it's a global situation that eventually is going to go to every part of the planet. The United States is mm-hmm. definitely going to be a target. But it's like in 61, you know, when Eisenhower, beware of the misplaced powers within the industrial-military complex. And the industrial-military complex takes in trillions and trillions, and not to mention the black budgets, mm-hmm. of perfecting the art of killing humans. I mean, I work with the Naval Electronics Engineering Center for 13 years on, you know, government satellite equipment and stuff like that, and I've seen huge, enormous amounts of money waste, you know, going in. But you know, if it's for military, the sky is the limit. You know, whatever you want, you know.
And let me ask you a quick question real quick. The military-industrial complex is not part of the United States of America in any form or design. Is that correct? It's actually funded by people who are outside the United States.
Well, that's a great question, Solaris. And let me throw something here in, because that is a fantastic question. I learned the most incredible thing this week. And if you study the military, if you study military hardware, this should really boggle your mind a little bit. We just sold the most advanced F-16 fighter plane that we have to Iraq. Now, it's like F-16I or something. It's the one we sell to Israel, who's supposed to be our ally and dear friend and all this. I'm telling you what, that's a joke, man. When, you know, we're,
unless we
you know,
have something better.
Well, I tell you, there's so much insanity in the military-industrial complex, and you bring up something so important. Who is the military-industrial complex? Who is it really supporting? Because the brainwashing is that the F-22 and the F-35 are the best planes we've got. We've spent billions and billions of dollars on these planes. But when they tested them against our existing planes, when they tested them against the Russian planes, they were shown in many ways not to be as effective as what we have. And when you're given, I mean, the F-16 is a tried and true plane, and the most advanced version of that, when you start selling that to Iraq, and then you're saying, oh, you know, we've been at war with Iraq, what, not long ago, a year ago, mm-hmm. 6 months ago, I lose track. It's insane. I mean, this is ridiculous. And Dan, can you comment on that? I'm ranting.
Well, yeah. When the, you know, and, you know, this stuff is baby poop. You know, our best fighters, the, you know, all this stuff is like nothing compared to what's in the faster-than-light craft that are weaponized, that or is in the breakaway civilization. These are jokes. You know, the rockets and the whole space program and NASA, all those were props in order to keep everybody pacified. Well, they've been to Mars and we've been to the moon, you know, we you know, with bases and everything on that. All this is like a joke. This is just
this is just
play toys for the cabal. You know,
let's
when
play out the black triangle. The black triangle
Vietnam,
crash. We'll just pull those out. Go ahead, I'm sorry, Dan.
The Viet Cong got all the stuff from Vietnam afterwards, you know. It's like even the riverboat repair barge I was on, you know, that went into you know, one of the navies, the South Vietnamese Navy, but then that was taken over. So you have all this technology that, you know, you have to go back and look at the history of how the corporations were basically infiltrated back in 1944, where the Nazis bought 750 corporations, and they had all the money and all the connections with the Nazis. Basically, if I could play just one little 41-second clip here of General Lufkin when he was on Eisenhower's staff, that he became aware that he got sold out, that the corporations, which, you know, Colonel Corso, you know, was a liaison, that they were in highly compartmented operations, you know, getting the Kevlar and the lasers, integrated circuits, and these, you know, down in Lockheed and Boeing, and they have these very compartmented operations. Well, guess who owns these corporations? You know, here's General Lufkin on Eisenhower's staff.
But what happened was Eisenhower got sold out. I think that he realized that all of a sudden this matter is going into the control of corporations. He realized that he was losing control. He realized that this the phenomenon of whatever it was that that we were faced with was not going to be in the best hands, and that those were the, as far as I can remember, that was the expression that was used. It's not going to be in the best hands, and so it has turned out to be.
And so it has turned out to be, and I think they kind of put it in very lightweight terms. In other words, instead of saying, you know, it's gone into the evil control of the Nazis and the corporations and the people with all the money, saying, oh, it's not going to be in the best hands, you know. But as it turns out, you know, everything's run by these multinational corporations. Who gets in the White House has to get a nod from David Rockefeller before going in. So, you know, everybody is in a particular position, and they keep replacing their people. But once in a while, they have somebody who is not on with their on board, not with their agenda, you know, like, say, Kennedy, for example, and, for example, the CIA directors and presidents that have been denied access to the UFO files, they find out that there's a whole nother agency within the intelligence agency that they don't have access to. Why? Because it is the secret government that is controlling these things behind the scenes, and the psyops that you see on television, and the perception that the American people have.
I also want to welcome Soul Connection to the chat room. Again, he says, by the way, Solaris is a great interviewer. I listen to her stuff all the time when uploaded to YouTube. So kudos for you,
Solaris. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Let's take a short break. I'm going to play a little relaxing music, and then I want to pick this conversation back up on the other side of the break. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we'll be back in about 1 minute. I want to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. This is your host, Mark Snyder. That song you heard is called Snowy River. It's off the Living Water CD. Hope you enjoy that. I hope you're enjoying my guest this evening, Dan Willis, Solaris Blue Raven. I hope you enjoyed the show this morning. I think it started at 9 a.m. I'm not sure exactly when. I've forgotten. I'm off for the next 5 days, so I'm going to be enjoying the beautiful outdoors and enjoying bringing you more Ohio Exopolitics. Before the break, we were talking about the insanity of the military-industrial complex, and Solaris asked the most profound question, who is the military-industrial complex? And I think that's so profound because the military-industrial complex is no longer serving the interests of nations. They'll sell their stuff to anybody. Anybody that will pay them the money, and that's the craziness about all this, don't you think, Dan? Still around there, Dan? Are you on break?
Sorry. somebody was communicating to me, and I dropped out for just a second. I'm sorry. Repeat the question again, Mark.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. I was just saying that the military-industrial complex is really about making money. It's not about protecting our nation. It's all about making money, and it's not really even necessarily associated with our nation anymore. I think Boeing is no longer in the United States. Some of these other countries have moved to China. We can't even build some of our weapons without the help of the Chinese. It's crazy. I'm ranting again.
You're right, though, and the Germans did win the war. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, I was just saying, you know, it's not obviously not about money. You know, the people who have the 1% of the 1% have more money than, you know, they know what to do with. It's all about the agenda.
The agenda. Explain. Control?
The agenda. Well, the agenda, you can, the history has given indicators what that agenda is. You know, they have, it seems, consistently been moving toward a one world totalitarian fascist regime controlled by a few people in a feudalist type of manner, where they basically use the earth for its resources and people as slaves, and a one world control at the service to the elite that have super advanced technology. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, that one movie that came out with where they had a space station orbiting the Earth, and they had advanced technologies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that one. Where they could heal people.
Yes,
I couldn't pronounce that one. But everybody down below is like, just fighting over resources and living in Tijuana type of shacks, and and it's almost as though Hollywood lets things out, but it's mixed. Just like all the ET UFO movies, there's some truths in that. There's truths in Star Trek, teleportation and all that stuff. But it's mixed. But it's mixed in such a way that, just like biblical writings have been manipulated in order to gain a certain perception of the population, they want, the ones in control want the human race to perceive, to create what the Nazis called Weltanschauungskrieg, which is a matrix of perception where the scientists and people only understand and perceive things along a certain way. They don't see outside the box. And so inch by inch, they seem to be inching along, just like von Braun talked about. They have long range. These people have long range plans. They don't do it in like a year or 2 years or 5 years. It's like Hitler said, give me a child at a certain age and he's mine for life. Their plan was to infiltrate the United States and use psychological warfare on the United States over a long range. So just think about it. Your children who have been born into this reality, a lot of them don't even know what they've learned in the history books of what happened in World War II and everything. They have no clue about what really happened and what they see on television and video games and everything else, and the shows that they watch with, all the human kill programming that the Tavistock's putting on all the crime show dramas. That is their reality. And as each generation gets born into this new indoctrination, the Weltanschauungskrieg, or worldview warfare, is what the Nazis called it, is very effective over a long period of time, because before you know it, they will have been programmed exactly what the agenda is, because they don't move quickly on these things. They do it over a long period of time.
That's my two bits on it. I'd like to play a clip. I hope this is the right clip. You talked about something called human kill programming that came from the Tavistock Institute, and this is a pretty long clip, but it's so dramatic and it's so shocking. If it's the one I think it is, I hope it is. It's of the second man shot in Ferguson, Missouri. This is wild.
The police gonna pull up. Y'all call the police? He's bagging up. He got a gun out. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. They got their guns out. Oh, they just killed this man. Damn. Oh, my God. They just killed him. Oh, here we go again. They just killed this man. He's dead.
like you locked him up and that nigga already dead, man. That's fucked up, dog.
I'm putting him in cuffs. He's dead. Oh my God. They just killed this man. He didn't have a gun on him.
They cuffing him.
Now they cuffing him. He already dead. He already dead. Y'all see it for yourself. The man is already dead. They cuffing him. They cuffing him. I got everything on camera. From the time it started and everything. Oh my God. They just killed him, y'all. He dead. This is just like, I don't even know what to do. Oh my God, he's still holding his gun out. The man is dead. Oh my God.
Anyway, it goes on, and I've listened to it probably 10 times. It's just shocking. And Dan, before I play that clip, you were talking about human kill programming from the Tavistock Institute. First, who and what is the Tavistock Institute, and what is human kill programming?
Well, the Tavistock started, you know, back in 1920. They was studying, you know, some of the soldiers, the post-traumatic stress syndrome. They didn't call it that back then, but it basically had huge amounts of funding from the usual names that you see involved in all these things, and there it has a connection, you know, with Sigmund Freud and everything. They are the masters at sociology and psychology of the human psyche and brainwashing. They it amazes me, you know, because you look at the movie titles, you know, and you look at all the crime dramas on television, and just about every channel you see somebody, you know, bang, bang, shoot them up, you know, you've got, you know, all the movies that are coming out, the Expendables 3, you know, where they're shooting everybody up, you know, and
sure.
it's amazing, you know, they got all these people with automatic weapons shooting at them. None of them get hurt, you know, and they get this false reality, you know, of what, you know, Hollywood is like, you know, oh, yeah, the hero, you know, James Bond, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, everybody's shooting at them. They make the worst shots in the world, you know, and so it gives this false reality. But, you know, the thing is that they keep putting into everybody's psyche this, you know, guns and killing and torture and things like that. And they find that in their psychological studies that people who have this in their psyche, the stress and fear that is going on all the time, if you become like scared little children that become more easily controllable and subservient to a government. And the same with sexuality. Early sex stimulation, they found, develops a child into like a neurotic child that's easily controlled as well. So you got a lot of sex and violence. My brother was telling me a friend who had a movie script and that he was going to Hollywood to it, and he connected with some big league, and the guy said to him, "Well, if it's got violence and sex in it, you're in." You know, I mean, you know, it's like, what is it? You look at the people who basically own and control Hollywood. You know, you look at the corporations that own and control all the media. You look at you start following the money of all these people and the connections. When you start doing that, you start seeing that there is an orchestrated effort that, you know, may tie in with the secret societies. There's indications. Because, you know, you can't have somebody who's a loose cannon. You got to have somebody who's been inside a coffin that the threat of death and to them and their family and a horrible death if they reveal any of those things. Those kind of people could work, you know. So you've got, this infrastructure that is Knights of Malta or whatever that keeps the secrecy going and this agenda going.
So who is the Tavistock Institute? What What group do they represent? Why are they programming our society with this horrible violence like we just listened to?
Well, again, the violence, you know, if you were, let's say you were an evil ruler of the planet and you wanted to control people, you'd hire all the best minds in psychology, and you'd have all these think tanks, right? So they could perceive things and manipulate information in such a way, neuro-linguistic programming, body language, inflection, know how to present imagery, you know, get it down to a masterful fine art of creating perception. And then what if you also know consciousness? What if you know the creative aspects of the interface of the conscious mind into the matrix? What if you also know that and move things along in the direction that you're wanting to go? You know, you look at the violence, that the copycat crimes that are going on in the world. You have to admit, it's escalating. You see more and more things that you never saw back in the 70s or 80s or 90s. I mean, these things are just bizarre stuff happening that involves insane violence going on. You know, woman going to this pregnant woman and taking a knife and slicing her open and taking the baby and, you know, whatever, you know, all these different things going on. It's like a, it's almost as though it's like a feedback system that's self-regenerating. I don't really have a full grasp of it myself. I'm trying to understand it. I've been studying consciousness for some time, and it does seem that where we put our attention is where energy goes, and that there may be an aspect of that there is definitely, without a doubt, it seems that they want to put images of people killing and hurting people and torturing people in as many ways possible. That's why you see now there's a CSI New Orleans besides CSI Miami and CSI LA and CSI New York and Blue Bloods and Criminal Minds. You got and a whole list of all these other crime dramas that give you a vehicle, especially like Criminal Minds, to get this imagery of people, with extreme prejudice, killing people and hurting people. So it's almost as though, you know, human see, human do.
Okay. So it's part of bringing in this police state, kind of programming us.
Well, you get exposed to that. You see that all the time. You think, well, that's normal. This is this is what normal is. And if you're a child, and I got raised on, Captain Kangaroo and Sheriff John's Lunch Brigade and, whatever, Outer Limits and stuff like that. Now the shows are like, you're seeing people torturing each other. It's scenes that you would never see. You know, if you watch the progression of Hollywood, you know, when the hero would come in, you never see, he would never, chop somebody's head off or blood squirting all over the place. You know, you wouldn't even see blood in the old movies. But, you know, the psyche has changed a lot that's in Hollywood.
So, you know, maybe what we could do, since we've got a few minutes left in the show here, maybe 14, maybe we could go back and try to focus on what we should be doing, what we should be focused on, what we should be looking at, which is the connection to all things. And we should focus on the incredible splendor of nature, which I think is really just the visible expression of the love of the Creator. Let me play just a little bit of a clip that talks about trees and talks about fractals and kind of get us back on a healthier mode of perception here.
That appears to give the most bang for the buck.
In 1997, West Brown and Enquist announced their controversial theory that fractals hold the key to the mysterious relationship between mass and energy use in animals. Now they are putting their theory to a bold new test, an experiment to help determine if the fractal structure of a single tree can predict how an entire rainforest works.
Measurements of its trunk.
Enquist has traveled to Costa Rica, to Guanacaste province in the northwestern part of the country. The government has set aside more than 300,000 acres in Guanacaste as a conservation area. This rainforest, like others around the world, plays a vital role in regulating the Earth's climate by removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere.
If you look at the forest, it basically breathes. And if we understand the total amount of carbon dioxide that's coming into these trees within this forest, we can then better understand how this forest then ultimately regulates the total amount of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere.
With carbon dioxide levels around the world rising, how much CO2 can rainforests like this one absorb? And how important is their role in protecting us from further global warming? Enquist and a team of U.S. scientists think that fractal geometry may help answer these questions.
Let's try to get the height of the tree measured here.
They are going to start by doing just about the last thing you'd think a scientist would do here. Cut down a balsa tree. It's dying anyway, and they have the permission of the authorities.
Anyway, Solaris, when I was on your show and I was talking about the Billy Meyer case, one of the things I brought up is in one of Billy's writings, he says that the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And don't you think that's where our psyche should be focused?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what we are. We're multidimensional beings, and we're constantly navigating through fractals of consciousness, through life itself. But, yeah, I think they're deploying a lot of psychotronic hardware to offset that. But once again, you just have to anchor in through the stars, through the universe, and through the Earth and the elements of the Earth and tune into the higher overtones of what's really happening in the cosmos.
And, Dan, you've talked about fractals already on the show. Can you, again, explain what that's all about?
Well, a fractal is a replication and division of itself. You know, you can see it in... You can see it in our, and you look at your hand, you can see your joints or your fingers going out. Your body is made up of a golden mean ratio. You look at plants and the leaves. And even the military uses fractal antennas because they can fit inside of a helmet. And what you have is a little antenna resonant system that's got a smaller one and got a smaller one, but they're all harmonically resonant. So you can have a very small antenna that's very effective because of the harmonic resonance that's going on within the elements. So, yeah, when you look at a rainforest, in Chinese and feng shui, they say if you want to look at what the big valley is doing, you know, you look at a little portion of it because everything's reflected in it. And I love where you're going. I love concentrating on what is the constructive things that humans can do to transform the situation on this planet. And the only thing that comes, and this is a continually evolving thing for all of us to try to understand what each of us can do to make the world, because we know the world could be a lot better than it is, and it seems like what you're doing with these talk shows is wonderful. First, people have to become aware of the deception that they've been hoodwinked, that they've been born into, and then I think they need to understand who they are, what they are as a spiritual being, and how that can affect the and with that wisdom, you know, use our thoughts to help focus on the transformation into a better direction.
Billy has this writing, it's called The Goblet of Truth, and it expresses it so beautifully. The paragraph has a title, it says, What the Truth Knows to Say, and it goes on and explains that rivers, lakes, streams, rocks, the earth, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage to rebirth, rebirth into the world of pure spirit. And many of these Weisenheiten, as he calls them, are connected by psychic vibration or these psychic swinging waves. And what I say is, if you go into the forest and you listen, you can hear the cicadas, you can hear the frogs, you can hear the peepers, you can hear all the different insects. And I like to say that the birds sing because they're aware that creation radiates love. And Billy says that creation radiates love and that we should be able to look at a tree and recognize the radiating love of creation, because love is the highest principle in creation and everything follows that principle. Every tiny plant, every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in creation, and that we as a species need to understand once again that we're connected to all things. And Svath told Billy that everything in the universe is one and it's all bound together. So at every moment, in every place, in every day, you can feel the radiating love of creation. But in order to do that, you have to be a good observer. You have to focus. You have to go out into creation and you have to observe and listen and relax and open your mind, because observation, true observation, is the beginning of real love. And Billy teaches that real love is understanding that you're connected to all things. Real love isn't emotional. Real love isn't even thought. It's not romantic in the way that we think of real love. He calls real love, it's a wisdom-conditioned love. And it starts by understanding our connection to all thing and having this deep and profound reverence for all life. Solaris, can you comment on any of that?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was muted for a second there. I just find that to be very beautiful, that statement, and in total resonance with what we really are about internally and externally. And I can't say it better than the way you just said it, Mark.
Dan, you have kind of a connection to the Native American, right?
Yeah, I'm part Cherokee. Yeah, you know, the Great Spirit, the white man came in and, you know, slaughtered all of them and thought we're a bunch of savages, you know. It's like
right. Somewhere
there's a balance between the two. Actually, the white man's kind of like, all of our advanced civilization with our smartphones and all that stuff is actually retarded compared to the Aborigines, you know, and their ability to connect with nature and some of the wisdom. But, you know, Marcel Vogel had a statement on love. He said, quote, "Love is the glue of the universe and it helps keep matter in form. When I love you, I empower you to bring yourself into a state of wholeness," unquote.
Wow.
I felt that statement resonated with me because the truth is what you're just saying is that there is no separation. Our science, you know, the Michelson-Morley experiment that was done a long time ago, they determined that, oh, nothing's interconnected, right? But then, and I think it was in the late 90s, the Air Force with new sophisticated equipment, and they found out that that was wrong. They found out actually everything is intimately interconnected, just as when Marcel thought of the plant in his laboratory from Czechoslovakia, and it instantaneously, in other words, this, the the inverse square law of distance, you know, the speed of light or anything, had nothing to do with it. It was instantaneously. Everything is interconnected. And you know, that wisdom has been taken out of the science that we learn.
It's so beautiful. It's so profound. Once you understand that wonderful connection that all things have, and if we could just get back to appreciation of nature, I think that would go so far, because I think part of the imbalance that's occurred in our society is like what you were saying with the plants. We do not respect the plants as a living thing, so we'll take a bulldozer and just bulldoze over a section of forest and then just put up a shopping mall. And we've done this over and over and over again, and see, we don't realize of the interconnectedness of all things. So these forests, they are moderators of our climate, you know, and they produce shade, and they absorb moisture, and they produce oxygen, and they stop those intense winds, and they moderate things. And since we've destroyed our forests now, we're starting to see this crazy weather. It's extremely hot. It's extremely cold. We're seeing these crazy firestorms, which are burning like crazy in Washington State. I'll play this clip real quick, and then we'll have to close out the show because we've only got a couple minutes.
Tonight, hot, dry winds are fanning wildfires in six western states. Hundreds of families have been forced from their homes, and some have no home to go back to. Carter Evans reports Washington is among the hardest hit.
Smoke rose 25,000 feet over the largest fires burning in Washington state. The fire that's destroyed 100 homes in Potreros has scorched more than 168,000 acres. Josh Allen was turned away at a roadblock.
Probably the hardest thing I've had to do. Knowing that your house is burning up.
This fire on the eastern slopes of the Cascade Mountains produced a wall of flames that moved in on the town of Leavenworth. 900 homes have been evacuated, including Tim Germain's.
It really looked like, you know, the cauldron of hell. You know, you could see flames everywhere you looked with this kind of heat and wind.
So we're in a serious situation on Earth. We don't get ourselves back on the right path. I want to thank Solaris. I want to thank Dan. Dan, please tell us about your website and anything else you want to leave us with.
Oh, yeah, I wrote an article regarding why they control the media, you know, and the fear about disclosing the extraterrestrial reality. It's thewebmatrix.net, www.thewebmatrix.net. You know, there's a fact that they know how to do geoengineering, and all you look at all the crop failures, you look at the droughts happening and the floods happening over here, the freezing happening over here, well, this is happening over there. And we know for a fact they have the abilities to geoengineer the weather. But, you know, they figure, hey, we can get away with this. We can just blame it on Mother Nature.
Solaris, we got about 30 seconds. Your website?
Okay, Night Shadow Anomaly Detectives is my website, and of course my books are available on Amazon.com. And thank you very much, Mark.
Well, you're very welcome. I want to thank everyone that listened to the show. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics, and we might even be on late tonight, so have a good day.
Cool.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Solaris. Thanks, guys. We are done. Talk to you later.